Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to a new installment of Pod Stallions. As with every single episode, I'm Brian, and to my left is Jason.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and happy 2016 to you all.
Happy 2016, and what I've always liked to do in January is something we call the Retro Awards, where we talk about our favorite things of the previous year. And what better way to kick off a year than let's recap 2015, which was a lot of fun. And if you're in my shoes, I don't know about you, Jason.
My shoes, too.
Yeah, and I mean, just in addition to the fact that I find that we grew our audience and a lot more people are listening to the show, responding. And if this wasn't a good kick in the pants, I actually ran into somebody who listened yesterday at a toy store.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
No way. Yep. What, tell me about that. What happened?
Well, I've met him before at a couple toy shows, but he's a regular listener. I believe he's written in. His fellow by the name of Grant. Hi, Grant. And it was
Grant?
Just serendipity to run into him, and he asked me when the next show was coming.
Yeah, that reminds me of a joke.
Yep.
Who's buried in Grant's tomb?
Grant.
Yeah. My dad would get me with that every time.
Yeah, that's in the vernacular of, you know, when someone drives by a cemetery and you go, you know, who's buried in there?
People are dying to get in there.
No, you know who's buried in there?
Who?
Dead people.
Yeah, he'd pull that on me every time with the whole, you know, gets buried in grits. It wasn't until I was a senior in high school that I finally caught on.
Yeah.
Finally got
dad jokes.
Dad jokes, yes.
Like we could do a whole episode subscription on service.
On dad jokes.
Yeah.
But hey, so who's Grant? Tell us more.
Grant was a fellow I've met a couple shows. Very nice man. A dedicated listener. He says hello. And it's just really nice because you think you're doing this and just sending it off into outer space, but we do get all kinds of really nice emails, and I don't know about you, but I run into folks who have actually listened, which is great. Really terrific.
It's not that I run into them.
You run over them?
I run over them. Yeah. I back up again to make sure I haven't hurt anyone and then run over them again.
Yeah.
But it's more via, you know, electronic communication sort of that I hear from people and,
the interwebs,
which is really very flattering any which way it is, but I don't know if I've ever met, I mean, besides people that know me already that know about the show, but I don't know if I've ever met anyone that's been like, oh, hey, I listen to your show all the time just randomly yet. So you've had that experience like four times now.
Yeah. Well, I set up at toy shows and I do live in a fairly populous region.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often thought that maybe also because I speak to that voice of people who grew up in this area.
Yeah, you are sort of a, well, see, that's just it. You had sort of more of a presence, a known presence before me, I think, on the internet, certainly.
Certain venues, others not so much, but yeah.
Well, yes, now you're just talking about the dirty stuff that I frequent. But yes, yeah. They know me better brothels than you. My name gets dropped much, much more.
Yes.
But so, Grant, thanks for listening.
You're a big tipper, I hear.
Thank you. That's almost a dad joke. that's almost like a grandpa.
Well, really, I've got two kids, and I've got that dad body going on, so... Maybe that's okay.
So thanks for listening, Grant. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just said something really cool there about, you know, doing this. And because it is, you know, I mean, you are more, since you're the guy really doing it, of the two of us, you know, and getting stuff up and putting stuff up on YouTube and stuff, you probably have a much more tangible reference for how many listeners there are. But for me, it's just nice to ever get feedback to know people are listening, because you do kind of forget sometimes that there may be a handful, five or six people out there listening to the show.
Well, you know what really struck me as funny as recently is I found out that iTunes is kind of not keeping every episode.
Our
back catalog is sort of getting harder to find. And one of my things over the holiday weekend is to make our back catalog more accessible.
Okay.
And what I'm trying to do right now is I'm putting all the old shows on YouTube, and then I will also create a new Pod Stallions page. And, oh, God, bear with me because my HTML skills are a bit archaic, but I'm going to try and create a new Pod Stallions page that references each MP3 file so you can just easily get it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. That was my idea, by the way, everybody.
It was. Yeah.
Totally my idea.
You're executive producer of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm one of 12 executive producers. Very top heavy, those credits on that thing.
So
that's very cool. And this is really your baby. I mean, if I haven't said it enough, or on air, certainly, if it weren't for Plaid Stallions and me getting in touch with you in the first place, we wouldn't have kicked off a friendship. But, you know, you carry with you a lot of, Plaid Stallions followers and readers and, lovers and all that stuff. And it's, you're the huge part of keeping this thing moving and, getting it out there once we, ramble on about shit we love.
Well, you know what? I gotta give you some props here, and this is gonna turn into the Sammy Maudlin show.
No, hey, I want it.
I'd be talking to myself if we did. It's like a game of handball, right? And sure. So this, you're 50% of the show, absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, it's we love hearing this stuff, and. As a matter of fact, because he'll probably be listening, there's a chap called Nate Hastings, who I've become chummy with, that he's a legend already by all the work he's done for Adult Swim and different animated shows, and just a very funny guy. But he loves our show, and he's been contacting me on a regular basis going backwards. I mean, we had a text conversation the other day about Rockford Files, because you were, I think, one of two or three or four people that texted me the day that the Rockford Files DVD set went on Amazon for like $50,
oh,
the whole series.
Really cool, yeah.
Everybody told me, so I got it. And Nate was one of the guys. And I'm throwing him Rockford stuff. And each third thing I'm throwing him via text, he goes, yeah, you mentioned that on the Detectives episode. Oh, I did? Yeah, well, but Tom Selleck as Lance, he was kind of the antithesis. And when Magnum, yep, you mentioned that on the Detective show. Like, I did? And that was like episode 4 or something, or whatever it was. But he's just getting, he's going backwards now and listening to all this stuff. And he tells me on certain drives that he's just digging into the show, and that we're a couple of voices. It's like we're right there with him, and he wants to jump in. And
okay, I find that happens a lot when people first discover the site. They will go through the entire thing, and I know when someone's discovered a site, because I'll touch my phone. It'll say you have 83 new comments.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. I'm going to say this now, and I'm doing it in advance, telling everyone and apologizing if I have said this already on the show, because literally you posted something yesterday or today, an episode that we did for Halloween that was just on store-bought costumes.
Mm-hmm.
I have no recollection of even suggesting that as a topic. So forgive me if I've repeated myself here, but one of the most gratifying things to hear, I am not someone that listens to podcasts. I mean, I've heard several, and I don't listen to anything regularly, but I forget sometimes on the other side of this that we're living in a podcast age, and people do like conversation, and if it's stimulating. So what I'm trying to say is thank you, everyone, again, because the compliment we seem to get the most, and that I take note of, is people like Nate who have said, I looked at the subject line and I listened to a couple minutes. I thought, this is not my bag. Like, I don't know anything about subject X, Y, Z, whatever. And then I just find myself continuing to listen because I love the conversation. and the way we sort of banter back and forth. So that's probably the biggest compliment. If people are still tuning in and listening to a couple of dorks like us, even though they don't know what the subject is, that's a huge compliment.
Yeah, I agree. I can't think of a better compliment than, you know, I've heard people say that. I don't watch Doctor Who, but somehow I listened to that whole thing. It's really nice.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. So enough about me.
Yeah, enough about, but well, that was more about the audience than anything else. So I just want to say thank you. I'm very appreciative of those of you that have checked us out this year. So let's we got a lot to talk about. So why don't we prattle through the subjects? And it is an award show, very much like many others, and that is the best of. And I like to pick things that have sort of a retro vibe or a retro feel, or properties that are beloved to me when I was a kid. So when we talk about the first category, best movie, I saw a lot of movies this year, but I am trying to kind of put it in a kid-like fashion. So what was your choice for number one best film of the year?
Well, now when we do this, should I say my number one and then my runners up, or just do my number one?
Good question.
For now.
You know what? Let's just do each other's number ones. That sounds really dirty.
Well, it sounded really filthy. And that's, we get that note a lot too. More filth in the show.
So. We're going to get a little blue in 2016.
Yeah, we're trying, everyone. Well, you know, I know it's about as obvious as you could possibly get, but it was a tight race, believe it or not, because there were a couple other things that I'll get to in a moment that I would have put up there. But there's no way I can hide my happiness or grin or enthusiasm for Star Wars, The Force Awakens. And just how, what a wonderful experience that was. Now, I am not going to get into the nitpicking. I am not going to get into, now the internet has flipped around and said how awful it is, and the writing, and this and that, and that it's a rehash, and even George Lucas has come out. I'm not even going to get into that.
No.
It doesn't matter, because you're talking to someone that has not been satisfied in what they've done for his favorite character, Han Solo, since 1980. So it was never a fitting way to bring him back in Return of the Jedi. I always felt ripped off. And the rest of the story still was wonderful and beautiful and still beats the crap out of what we got in those prequels. I don't need to praise it. I don't need to nitpick it. All I need to say is I knew Han Solo was going to be the central character in this thing, and wasn't surprised by much of anything that went down in this thing, but I loved every frame of it. And I truly felt like I was, you know, 10, 11 years old again. Like, this was my Star Wars. This was why I loved this thing so much. It's, you know, it will never be perfect. It will never be everything that it is in our collective imaginations and histories. It doesn't matter. But like anything else that you love or like, if someone takes it and gets it wrong, you sure do notice when they get it wrong. So when they get it right, whether it's what Marvel is doing or Peter Capaldi or whatever it might be, if it's something that you love, when they get it right, it really needs to be embraced, because they can get it wrong a lot of the time and still make $1 billion. So yeah. I love this thing. I have been buying the odd toy here and there, and even buying stuff I don't – cookies with characters' faces on them, because I love this so much. So I can't wait. I've seen it twice. Can't wait to see it again. That's my number one.
I understand, and I really enjoyed it too. And I'm in the same boat as you, where I will not nitpick the crap out of it. It did have a lot. It did circle back a lot to the original trilogy, but I'm sure, you know, that may have been predicated by the fact that the prequels didn't make you feel like you were watching Star Wars. At least me, I didn't like the characters. I thought the plots were dull. There was too much CGI.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, the thing that always bothered me, not to belabor a point, but you should have cried when Anakin turned dark. You should have been sad. But no, he was a dick for three movies.
But you know what? It's what I would say to that note, and again, this could be easily a 90-minute conversation about the back and forth thing with that. You know, what I love about the internet, you know, is what I hate about it too. Because now there are actually people bitching that it's too similar to Star Wars: A New Hope.
Yeah.
You know, now, well, they could have done this, they could have done that. you know, and it's like, oh my God, it'll never be perfect. It'll never be just what you want. And you're complaining about that. My note to what you just said was, this kid who I've never liked, this Adam Driver, I will say it on record, I have not liked him in anything. I thought he did a terrific job, but what little he showed us in this film is exactly what Anakin should have been. That's where they should have taken that character. And that character should have been there already in the second film.
Yeah.
If we had not started with him as a little boy, by the second film, he could have been this petulant, spoiled kid, you know, and have these tantrums and do this. I think they nailed it better in this, and it's not even Anakin, you know, yeah. and there was heartbreak in this, too.
I truly enjoyed it. I didn't need all the little. There was maybe, you know, a few too many little nods, like the chessboard lighting up was like, okay. But all in all, I was very entertained. I will not nitpick it or take it apart. I enjoyed the film. I will watch it again. And that's saying a lot because I've been burned out of Star Wars for 20 years.
Oh, I know. And you're talking to someone here who...
Well, I'm pre the prequels. I had a melt.
No, I was getting there too.
Yeah.
You had to quantify. I mean, I was quantifying before the prequels by saying, well, you know, I like Star Wars and I like Empire, but you can keep Jedi. You know, I was even that kid that was like, they were important to me. They were huge things in my life, but they were not perfect. I spent more time on Indiana Jones and Bond and Doctor Who than I did, you know, on Star Wars, because I really was only talking about two movies. And then as I had never read the extended books, the only thing I read was one of those, the Dark Empire comic.
Mm.
Never got into any of that stuff.
My wife's actually the big, my wife's the Star Wars fan in the house.
I'm with you. I mean, when it's done right, it's, you know, I mean, Star Wars and Empire movies I can watch every 6 months easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they're good films.
But not the universe. What was your number one pick?
I had to think about this because I liked a lot of what I saw this year. I didn't really see anything in the theater that I thought was crap, which is nice for a change. But I would have to go with Mad Max, Fury Road.
Yeah.
It does a few things that few sequels can do, and it's been a while. And, you know, it's a lot like Star Wars. I didn't really enjoy the third one.
I'm not a big
Thunderdome fan.
I feel like this one slipped in and no time had passed? Like, the tone and the... It felt like that second film to you, but you know, notched up, ratcheted up?
Yeah, and the thing is, it seamlessly fits in with the series.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a Mad Max film.
Yep.
It is... It's got a bigger budget, or at least it feels like it does. It's got new technology, but and then of course a new cast, right? The Mel Gibson's not involved,
right?
And 15 minutes in, I was like, wow! I remember just being blown away, at how good this was.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people complain. Well, that's all people do anymore. I feel like we're getting to a society of Roman emperors, you know, and. We're just everything's being catered to us, and we're just complaining. I don't know if it's the ease of the internet or.
Oh, I think it's the ease. I think people, you know, the fans, quote fans of things. I'm sure you could go back to the Buck Rogers radio show or something and find letters of kids at home going, "You're spending too much time on Wilma," or whatever. I'm sure you could find that. The difference is, I mean, let's, you know, we both love Doctor Who. Peter Capaldi used to send letters into the fan club and to the BBC saying how the show could be better, you know. But the difference now is everybody does it, everybody can do it, and if your opinion gets picked up and gets out there, it'll get repeated quickly and suddenly be everywhere.
But what kills me is now there's a trend, and not to get too offside, but I there are some friends of mine who did not enjoy The Force Awakens.
Okay.
And they were sending out articles on Facebook like reasons it sucked.
Jesus.
And it's like, why are you getting evangelical about this?
Yeah, why?
When I don't like a film, I go, "Oh, I thought that was crap. I thought it was crap." If you enjoyed it.
There was someone I saw on Facebook or somewhere that literally started a thread. And it started. This is about 3 days after this thing had premiered, and the thread was something like, "But was The Force Awakens really the best title for the film? if you think about what happens in this story, and it's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? You're picking apart the title of the film. None of them. Star Wars is a stupid title. It is the dumbest title in the. So's Jaws. It is. It screams B movie shit film.
Yep.
But you're going to spend your time complaining that it wasn't the best way to What could it have been called that would have made you happy? Mm-hmm. And my argument was, it could have been called Terms of Endearment. It was wonderful. I don't give a shit what it was called.
It's funny.
It's just like they've just now announced. I mean, today I think it's been confirmed that there's going to be a fifth Indiana Jones film.
Oh.
Now, which I'm totally for. I'm with it. I'm great. Whatever you think of Crystal Skull, it doesn't matter. For me, Raiders of the Lost Ark is a perfect film. It is one of my top five films of all time. The other two that were made don't even come close. They're not even in the top 50, really, because Raiders is perfect. So I knew when Crystal Skull... All I cared about was I going to believe this guy was still Indiana Jones and could pull it off? And that's all I need. So it's like, well, I'd rather not have it. I'd rather have it and have it done right than not have it, or have it and have it done, you know, off, you know, terribly, mm-hmm. like what DC does with their movies and stuff. It's just like, my God, these people will never be happy. We just have to bask. We're living in a golden age where everything is possible, and I'm with, and just back to Mad Max real quick. It almost got into my three. In fact, you know, it might have to, because I'm thinking now that my third. Runner-up choice is not nearly within the realm of the show, but it's so brilliant and such an important film that I kind of had to move it up.
I see.
But anyway, sorry.
Okay. So what were your runners-up?
Well, my runners-up were a movie called Sicario.
Yeah.
With Benicio del Toro and Josh Brolin and Emily Blunt. And it was done by this guy, Denis Villeneuve, whatever his name is. He did a movie called Prisoners a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant film. Very tough film to watch, but I thought it was a terrific movie. He did another one with the same dude, Jake Gyllenhaal, which was okay. Now this one, this Sicario, is fantastic. Just a great thriller, you know, spy kind of a thing. And he's going to be doing the new Blade Runner film.
Oh, wow.
Harrison Ford says is the best script he's ever read. So I'll, you know, when someone's good like that, I'll watch anything that they do. I'll get excited about their next thing. Mm-hmm. Sicario is a great thriller. Rent it as soon as you can if you haven't seen it. And my second runner-up is a movie called Spotlight with Michael Keaton and Mark Ruffalo and John Slattery, Rachel McAdams. It's a horrible subject. It's a horrible, horrible thing to have to think about and talk about. But it's about this Catholic Church, that broke in Boston, and you know whatever. It doesn't matter. To me, it's like one of the most important stories in America ever, as a story that broke. But the way this thing is done, and the characters in it, and the writing, it's just a great. It's a sad, horrible story, but the way they put this thing together is brilliant. And I recommend everybody seeing it because it's an important story. And Keaton is just, you know, he's just one of these. I just love the guy. I wish he would do more. So it doesn't really fit into our show, but Fury Road, I've seen it. I've watched it five times, twice in the theater, and three times since I've had it on DVD. I love it. So it's right there too. But it's brilliant. What were your two runner-ups?
Well, they're not quite as sophisticated as yours. I'm gonna look like an 8-year-old now. You know what? I saw lots of movies, but I was just trying to go for the pop culture.
No. I'm sorry. Because well, let me quantify though. Because my other popcorn and pop culture ones will come into the rest of the list.
Oh, okay. I see.
So I was saving a certain
one.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I really liked Ant-Man. You know, one of the things that I really enjoyed about it was it brought back that vibe that the Donner Superman films had a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit of fun. There was a sense of humor to it. It wasn't this... I didn't get to see buildings blow up, which I was happy with because I'm kind of bored of that.
And once again, Marvel is doing this thing where they're trying to make each one different than the one before it based on the character. And how much, let me ask you this, how much of Edgar Wright's mojo do you think we're still in this movie?
I think it's probably a strong passing grade. I would say 60 to 70%.
I would say 70, 75%. Yeah. It felt like so much groundwork had been done.
I think everything I liked was Edgar Wright.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. Yeah. Even the way... Who's that actor? You know, I can't think of his name, but he's the Hispanic guy that he does. He goes from drama to comedy effortlessly, and he was his best buddy in the movie. What the hell is his name?
I forget his name.
It's on the tip of my... I love this dude.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
Yeah, Michael Pena. Pena?
Is that it?
I think it's Michael Pena. That whole time when he tells his stories and goes, and then I talked to my friend who talked to my cousin, whatever, that's Edgar Wright.
Yeah, no, there's no way his fingerprints aren't on that. Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
I loved it. And you know what? As another thumbs up, my mother loved it. She saw it before she came for her visit this year. She loves all the Marvel stuff. She hadn't seen some other Marvel, but she went out and saw Ant-Man when it came out, and she adored it.
Yeah,
and I showed it for her again while she was here.
I watched it with my wife and son, and then my daughter came back from camp, and she said, "How dare you see Ant-Man without me?" And I rarely do this, but I was like, I was thrilled to go to the movies and see it again.
And I've never minded Paul Rudd.
I'm glad. I've always liked Paul Rudd.
I think he does a great job. What was your third?
I loved Avengers Age of Ultron. I know a lot of people lambasted it, but to me it was a solid, fun movie. I'm saying fans were kind of putting it down this year, and I can't understand why. You know, it was a lot of fun. Is it as fun as the first Avengers? I don't think I'm ever going to get over the gee whiz of the first one, you know.
Exactly.
And the second one, you know, they were trying to shoehorn more characters in. It got a little crowded. Still enjoyed it. I really did.
I'll say this because it's not fair that I can't add this mess, but we'll eventually get to our DVD stuff.
Yeah.
Where I was going to talk about Age of Ultron, but I might as well talk about it now since you are. Yes, I agree with everything you're saying about the first Avengers and that feeling and everything. I will say this. Age of Ultron, I have watched more in a shorter span of time than I did with the first Avengers when it came out on DVD.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but every time I put it in, it gets better and better and better. I've said this before about Marvel casting. Across the board casting. I can't think of one raised eyebrow. I can't think of a name ever thrown out since 2008 where I have gone, really? That guy's going to? Oh, that's a terrible idea. Sometimes I've gone, oh, that could be interesting. But I've never balked at anything that they've done. They have got it so figured out. And I watch Ultron. And once again, remember, you know, the first Avengers, none of these were A-list people. None of these were the faces that each made, you know, billions off of movies and stuff. This movie, there is not a square inch of wasted space in this movie. Like, every single scene, every snippet of dialogue keeps that story moving. It does three things. Keeps the story moving. It shows you the characters. It shows you the strength of the characters, the different personalities, etc. And it shows off what abilities each of them have. And I'll give you two examples. One is the brief moment in Avengers Tower when Ultron first wakes up.
Yeah.
You watch that sequence again. Everybody is working to their best ability, but no one is doing shit where you go, Scarlett Johansson wouldn't be doing that. That doesn't make any sense. Even Banner goes to kind of hide so he doesn't get all raged. Everything makes sense. It's so well thought out. And then the other sequence is when Scarlett Johansson grabs the body that we don't know yet is going to be the Vision in that coffin. Or no, sorry, Ultron and those guys take it in the truck. Hawkeye is above giving signals to Cap, who's on his feet.
Yeah.
And then Scarlett shoots out the motorcycle from the Quinjet. That whole thing, and you watch it again, and I go... I'm sitting there going, I can't believe I'm seeing this. This is like reading a comic book. Like, Cap is running across a freeway, jumping off the overpass, jumping onto a truck, fighting Ultron. She's on a motorcycle, picking up Cap's shield. I mean, the whole thing. And then eventually you get to the train with Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch helping out.
Yeah.
It's like reading a fucking comic book.
I agree.
Done better.
Yeah, I saw it twice. I saw it at the drive-in, which was not ideal.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw it at the theater again. And I was going to pick it up on DVD, but Netflix Canada already has it on Netflix.
Here. I am going to say this again. Joss Whedon, and this is coming from someone who has seen him at the Entertainment Weekly party on the dance floor. Having said that and having mentioned it and having seen him dance, I can say I still think he's incredibly gifted. And when he does character, when he like Firefly, I was never a Buffy guy, never got into his other shows. Firefly I liked. Serenity I think is brilliant. And so when he was said it was, and I also his X-Men book, the Astonishing book that he did, when they said he was going to do Avengers, said great. You watch this again, like he just knows how to give everyone their moment. I mean,
yeah.
Black Widow even gets to call Iron Man Shellhead.
Yeah.
You know, no one has done that yet. And the other thing, the Vision, who was one of my favorite characters, they actually finally got to the Vision, and every line out of his mouth was gold, especially the end.
Yeah.
His final scene with Ultron is, I think it's like breathtaking. It's like
and I also love, like, a lot of people nitpick the movie costumes, which drives me nuts. But I've noticed two things with Vision and now Doctor Strange, the photos have been released. If it's something that doesn't have any sort of practicality in real life, like, you know, they tried to make Captain America look combat ready, and they,
right.
You know, Hawkeye, they've got to make look, you know, less ridiculous. But, you know, an android and a sorcerer, they pretty much just look like they stepped out of the comics. Because there's no real world basis for an android and a sorcerer, you know?
It's the way they, and I will get to this when we get to our DVDs, but
yeah.
It's the way they have rolled this out. That's exactly, and even if you think about the lines that you've heard, like what's the one, it's in Iron Man 3, which is a frickin' love, and Ben Kingsley in Iron Man 3, and Ben Kingsley in that short that's on the Thor
yep.
Dark World. But there's a line from Guy Pearce where he says, it just a throwaway line says to Tony, you know, ever since that guy with the hammer fell out of the sky, things have, you know, things that were strange don't seem so strange. They've slowly been rolling out the weirdness.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to Strange and Vision or whatever, you are looking at characters who are going, well, shit, stuff came out of the sky a couple years ago, and there were these aliens, and then there's this guy from, you know, it's a Norse god. It doesn't. You said it exactly. That's precisely, I think, what the plan was. That by the time you get to these, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy type characters that'll eventually mesh their way into Marvel films, that you're going, well, shit, we've already broken the wall down. We're mm-hmm. now in the realm of the unbelievable, sort of.
Exactly.
Which was always kind of the problem with the Nolan stuff with Batman. You thought, they're never going to get to Man-Bat. You will never see that character in a Nolan movie because mm-hmm. it won't really make sense.
And the thing about the Nolan movies is on the surface they look practical, but then the plots get so ridiculously silly, you're like, you know, I kind of want to see the Penguin now.
Yeah, there's that, and also the no one steps in when someone goes, "Cause I'm not wearing hockey pants."
Yeah.
You know, there might be a different way you could do that. Yeah. I don't know, for three movies. But anyway,
we should move on to.
You know, something that was pointed out to me recently that I totally forgot. Keaton was the first guy that ever changed his voice from Batman to Bruce Wayne.
Huh.
And then it made its way into the cartoon, the animated series, and then everyone's done it since. But Keaton was the very first guy to do that. He never had that before. So just saying,
okay. Take that, Olan Sewell.
Take that, Affleck.
So, okay, let's move on to DVD releases.
Yeah, you go first. What's your...
You know what? I didn't buy a lot this year. I'm surprised. I bought a lot of...
That's kind of surprising.
I bought a lot of back catalog stuff.
Okay. And well, that counts.
Counts. Well, I mean, I bought Flash Gordon on Blu-ray, which I can't believe I didn't own on Blu-ray.
Is this a documentary? What is this film?
Flash Gordon. It's a little-known film. You've never heard of it.
Barbara Hershey.
Yes. It is a tearful. Yeah.
Yep. I think I've seen it.
Yeah. So, but the one thing that I will, I always buy them. I always watch every single thing, and I get excited when they come out. Is Shout Factory has been re-releasing the Mystery Science Theater collection for years. Yeah. They put little documentaries on these things, and they just get better and better. And
now, are the documentaries about...
Yeah, about the movies.
Or are they about the movies themselves?
They're about the movies themselves.
Oh, really?
There's a company called Ballyhoo Pictures, and they make these little shorts that are just fabulous. And, you know, like, on the last set I bought, because I was expecting one for Christmas that didn't happen, so the last set I bought had some real seminal movies like Daddy-O and Earth vs. the Spider. You know, and they did a feature on Daddy-O, they did a feature on Earth vs. the Spider.
Oh, cool.
They do these beautiful things, and if they can find the actor, you know, if they can find the Puma Man actor, they'll talk to him. And what's really funny is some of them, they'll ask them, you know, what do you think of the Mystery Science Theater treatment? And these people will go, I thought it was crap. You know?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They'll get negative, so they'll leave it right in there. It's fabulous. And I will buy any entertainment-related documentaries that Ballyhoo puts out because they're so good.
Oh, that's good to know.
They're so good.
Well, that's the thing. It's so funny you say that because knowing that I was going to see Hateful Eight, you know, when it came out, Tarantino. And I think you're a bit of a Tarantino fan, aren't you?
I would count myself as one, yeah.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I as a human, you know, in an interview, different story. But, like, you know, now there's like this...
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to be on a long train ride with him.
No, I don't think I'd want to be on a short train ride with him. But... you know, I realize, oh, I've got this one. Oh, I don't have this one anymore. You know, I used to have this on regular. I don't have it on Blu-ray, whatever. So I finally just, you know, caved and got the box set from, you know, through Amazon. That's like all of his stuff. But I'm looking at the packaging, and it's like, you know, 15 hours of blah blah blah. Well, now we're in the age sort of where, you know, I want all those extras. But for me it's a lot sexier when you get something that's more obscure. Like if I were to, there's a new Buckaroo Banzai Blu-ray in the UK. Now there's something that was filmed at an event that Kevin Smith hosted, whatever, and it's John Lithgow and Weller. But I mean, if they could sit down with the entire cast, Goldblum, Clancy Brown, Alan Bart, you know, and do one of those things, it would be more exciting to me. Whereas now everything that's being made now, everyone knows about the DVD market, so it's not that I don't want this stuff. It's just not as cool as what you're talking about now.
Yeah,
sitting people down like this, well after the fact, to talk about shit that people don't know about.
And to that point, the other thing I really loved this year, and this is obscure, but it's 70s related, is Grindhouse Releasing released "Gone with the Pope" and "Massacre Mafia Style." On Blu-ray, and these are films.
I know what these are, man. I swear I know these. You mentioned these to me before.
You and I had a phone conversation.
Yeah.
Duke Mitchell, who's famous for two things. Mitchell was a lounge singer. He was famous for being the singing voice of Fred Flintstone, and
that's
he was
right.
Also in the 1950s. He was paired up with a fellow by the name of Sammy Petrillo, and Petrillo looked like Jerry Lewis's clone. So Duke Mitchell became kind of an ersatz Dean Martin.
Okay.
And they're famously, I think they did some television, they did some clubs, but they famously did a movie called Bela Lugosi Meets a Brooklyn Gorilla. And
it's actually a documentary.
Oh, it's a Skid Row piece of crap. But it's a fun movie, it's a fun little piece of history. But Duke Mitchell in the 1970s decided he was going to make his own independent cinema, and he created two films, Massacre Mafia Style, which got finished, and Gone with the Pope, which is about the kidnapping of the Pope, by the way, where he's going to demand a dollar from every Catholic for his return, did not get finished. They found it, and Grindhouse Releasing restored it, because Duke Mitchell died in the late 70s of lung cancer.
And he was a character, right?
He was... You get to watch these documentaries on the Blu-ray, and you realize that, like, how come this guy was, like, best friends with Sinatra? Mm-hmm. Never became a household name. Mm-hmm. And then you find out, like, if you were pissing him off in the audience while he's singing, he'd just jump off the stage and beat the crap out of you. He didn't take crap from anybody. And
funny, was he a little guy too?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
See, because, you know, I told you about a documentary with Vince Guaraldi. They said that Vince Guaraldi, if a club owner, the guy that did the Peanuts music, if the club owner was jerking him around, there was one time where he took an axe to his piano seat in the middle of a gig and just hacked it up or, like, lit it on fire or something as a big middle finger to the club. I'm like, Vince Guaraldi?
Yeah.
That's writing all this sweet peanuts stuff?
The Schroeder guy?
and Lucy?
Yeah.
He took an axe to his piano stool.
Funny. Wow.
But he was a little guy. He was like 5 foot tall and didn't like taking shit off anybody.
Yeah.
So maybe there was that Napoleon sort of complex thing.
Could be. So what were your DVD choices for 2015?
Well, again, I may be stretching the bounds here a little bit on this, but the Holocaust documentary. No, I'm not getting heavy. I'm kidding. The DVD, the jumbo. That's not the right word. The deluxe DVD release Blu-ray of The Beatles 1. It's a CD. They remastered the hits disc 1.
Oh yeah.
But the DVDs. And they come with this amazing book that breaks every one of these clips down. Are basically putting it in loose terms, the Beatles music videos, you know. And as people found out years later, or kind of understood, when you go back and you see these filmed mimed performances like in a field or whatever, and you go back, oh, I didn't know that Traffic did a music video. Well, it wasn't exactly a music video. It was harder and harder for the Beatles to make all the appearances that they were wanted, to be at these shows all over the world and stuff. And of course, they wanted to get back into the studio and do less traveling. And so right around the time of Paperback Writer and Rain in like 66, they went out and filmed a couple of promos.
I see.
Mimed the songs, and that those things made their way around the world, and that sort of started to become the norm. So once again, the Beatles kick something off.
Now, you jokingly mentioned a World War II, and I gotta say, when you say a Beatles or World War II products, I think, how can anyone mine anything interesting out of those subjects? So to hear you say that this is like you really dug this, they must have done a lot of work.
Well, I'll tell you why too, because when you finally get the official thing,
yeah. I see.
You know that it's the. In other words, like a lot of this material, I could dig around and find on YouTube.
Okay.
Fact is, the Beatles own every piece of footage. There's only one piece of footage that you can license if you want to make a show about the Beatles, and that's them at JFK Airport. That press conference, coming off the plane, the press conference kind of. That's it. Every single other image and piece of footage is owned by Apple. So to finally get these things cleaned up and remastered, like the Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane, to have them all in one collection, and not just the ones that everybody kind of knows, but the ones that are weirder and different takes. And like, there's one clip that I'll just tell you about. There's one clip that... I don't know. I've never seen this thing. I don't know where it came from or how they found it, but they were again, I'm not trying to sound like they, poor Beatles, but they really were worked to death in the 60s. I mean they never had a day off. They like, if they were going here, then they'd have to go here to record, and they had to go here and make an appearance, whatever. And there's one shot of them clearly in the middle of filming some of these black and white, promos in about 65 or so, where John and Ringo are sitting on the floor. Paul and George are standing, and they're eating fish and chips out of newspapers with their fingers all greasy. And the song is still rolling. So every now and then, they'll kind of look at the camera and mime a line. And the word is that Brian Epstein never wanted it to be seen by the public, to see them, looking common, like they're eating greasy food sort of thing. Like, I've never seen that in all my years of Beatle lore.
Okay, so I can see... That you answered my question. I just wondered how that could be, but I guess in the same regard, to put it in a Star Wars vernacular, we've all seen the holiday special.
Yes.
But if Disney cleaned it up, put it on Blu-ray, and added a documentary,
yes,
we'd all line up around the block to get it. I mean, and we would all probably like, I can't believe I'm doing this.
That's exactly. It's funny you say that, because if you go to my Facebook,
yeah.
I reposted something. Someone put a collection of all these black and white shots. From Star Wars to Jedi, of Ford, Anthony Daniels, Mark Hamill, whatever, and some of them I've seen, a few I've barely seen, and then there's a couple that I'm going, that's Ford talking to Carrie Fisher on the set of the holiday special in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that shot, and it just made me buzz, like, oh my gosh, there's still stuff out there too.
You haven't seen, yeah.
Haven't seen. My other two, real quick, were this is what I was getting to, the Marvel thing. I've got the first Marvel collection, the deluxe set.
Oh yeah,
in the little briefcase with the Tesseract. Now this one that just came out is Phase 2
all on Blu-ray, special packaging, and it comes with the orb from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Neato.
Toss around.
Can you lend it to me?
Say again?
Can you lend it to me?
Yeah, which one do you want? Do you want the orb? Do you want the...
No, I just meant the DVDs. I'd love to tool around. Like, you can't rent DVDs anymore around here.
Well, there's that, and also there's a lot of stuff on these Blu-rays that isn't in... In other words, like you can... I've already got most of them on DVD, but this one, on one of the bonus sections of the bonus DVD in the set, they've taken all the Marvel one-shots and stuck them onto one DVD. So you can go to the menu and pick one of, like, eight... Of the one shots that they've done, which end up on every DVD release, and they're all on one collection now.
That's cool.
And I just again, they've got it so well mapped out that you can even take the little envelope. It comes with the orb, and then it comes with more memorabilia, like, you know, a Tony Stark tattoo and things that look like props from the film, whatever. And it comes in this little envelope. You can take the envelope away from this set, open up the briefcase from the first set. And the envelope fits in the section where the files are, the paper files are, in the first suitcase set.
Groovy.
Like, they're really planning this shit out. And I love, you know how much I love tchotchkes and prop stuff.
Yeah, you love that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's right up your alley.
So I love that. And then, what was the other one? Oh, you know, the other thing I got was an Evil Dead anthology. It came out a year ago, but I just tracked it down from Australia. It's kind of hinky because a couple of the DVDs don't work on U.S. Blu-ray, but the rest of them do.
Yeah.
And it's got a documentary that no one has seen. But best of all, it's a book, not a little DVD size, but a book-size replica of the Book of the Dead. And it also comes with the dagger, the prop version of the dagger.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so that, but it's Australia only, and it's a few
I tapped out, man. There's so many versions and cuts of Evil Dead. And
I know. Yeah. I just wanted the book, and I wanted the... But this one also comes with the new Evil Dead.
Ah.
And a bonus disc from that, which I thought was very good.
I didn't dig the new one, but, you know...
I thought it was good and creepy, but...
Yeah, you know what, I don't begrudge it. Like, I have friends who get really bent out of shape about remakes, and I always say, well, you know, the one thing the remake will do is bring attention to the original...
Right.
And you'll probably get a really nice Blu-ray set out of it, so
it's
exactly. Not a bad thing. And it's not like they go, well, here's the remake, now we're going to take away the original and bury it in a dumpster. No, it's like...
See, you can always... I can go, okay, they're going to remake it, that just means that's a really good thing. Can I get pissy about no original ideas? Fine. But it's never going to stop that original thing from being there.
Yeah, it's still good.
It's only when a decade goes by and someone says, you know, I prefer so-and-so as this, or I prefer the remake of Psycho as opposed to the Hitchcock one. That's when you go, what? How could you possibly prefer, you know...
Vince Vaughn is Norman Bates.
That's when you go, oh, yeah, hold on.
But, you know, luckily history does just kind of... Like, do you remember there was a remake of Rollerball?
Oh, my God, yeah, because it was right as MGM was really in the crapper.
Yeah.
And it sat on the shelf for years.
And it was horrible because the one thing that the original Rollerball was about was the corporations taking over America.
Right.
And, you know, that allegory makes more sense now, and they remove it from the remake, which is like,
The original was Norman Jewison.
Yeah. No, it's a brilliant film. Anyways, sorry.
I told you my wife worked for him for years.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, yeah, he's Canadian.
We'll save that for another story.
All right.
Development for him.
So let's move on to television. Yes. And it was a fantastic year for television.
Right?
I mean, from Doctor Who to Jessica Jones to Daredevil, I was hooked. But I have to pick two favorites.
Yes.
And you know, I have a tie in mind. The first one is With Bob and David, which reunited the Mr. Show cast.
Yes.
God, I loved it. It was too short. That's the only thing I got to say. It's like they just picked it up, and it went right back to being Mr. Show.
It really did. It did. I went back and picked. I forgot that I'd watched a few, and then went back and watched the rest. And it's just as goofy and kind of brilliant.
Oh, it had me howling by the first episode.
Yeah.
And my other favorite is Ash versus Evil Dead.
Right.
It just came out of nowhere. It as a fan of the old Xena and Hercules show, it's nice to see. All the names these guys never, you know, from the people to the music to the guys directing it, they never forget a friend.
And Campbell and Lucy Lawless together.
Well, yeah, but every episode is also, most of the episodes seem to be directed by Robert Hurst.
Yes.
Who, who did the who was Autolycles on her, was it Autolycles?
Yeah. Before you go any further,
yeah,
I am about
Michael Hurst
one episode and 5 minutes behind.
I was never going to do that.
Wrapping this. Okay, I just want to make sure because that's my number one.
Yeah.
My number one is even though I haven't even finished it yet.
And the music is still done by Joe LaDuca.
The music cues.
Yeah.
Like the classic FM radio cues that are in this thing.
You know, I'm beginning to wonder, do you think it's a Michigan-based thing? Because I've heard Ted Nugent, I've heard Alice Cooper, who was born in Michigan. I was beginning to wonder, and I'm starting to lose it, but I kind of thought that maybe there's a Michigan connection to it.
That there could very well be. That
but I can't... I love the show's format. I love that it's half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Campbell deserves more in this life, and this is great.
No one is happier than me that this guy is becoming, has almost become a household name, and that he's never stopped working like the past decade. He's gone from, you know, now with, you know, Burn Notice. That's it was a huge, huge show. Good for him.
Yeah.
But man, when this thing happens and you feel like not an ounce of time has gone by, what's more, it just feels right. It's not forced. It's not being done by people that don't understand the character, that, you know, just maybe he understood it, but he got stuck in a thing and someone else wrote it or whatever. It just, there's so much love pouring out of this thing. I love the whole cat, the two kids, his two buddies, I think are brilliant. But even his little parts, like the one dude he met that was from the militia.
Yeah.
just little stuff like that. Like, it's just... I'm still quoting the first couple episodes. I'm doing lots of quotes with my wife that cracks her up.
And my unofficial runner-up would be the Wet Hot American Summer series.
Oh, yeah.
I loved Wet Hot American Summer.
Of course you did.
And having a series come 15 years later where they're all older, balder, and fatter, and they're still playing the same age is just...
Of course.
It just was wonderfully absurd and... It worked for me. It, you know, it absolutely did.
I have not. It's funny you say because I've forgotten about it. I watched the first couple episodes and then just kind of forgot about it. But
binged
I go back. It's on my Netflix thing. So.
Binged it in the summer and I loved it. So what were your favorite TV picks?
My favorite pick is Ash versus Evil Dead. That's number one.
Excellent choice.
For all the reasons I said. Very, very close second. The only reason that Ash gets up there is because of how much I love Bruce Campbell and the original movies and everything. But neck and neck is the Daredevil series on Netflix.
Yeah, it was excellent.
Just, it got better and better and better. And I mean, I know everyone's talking about it, but between D'Onofrio's performance, I mean, and he pulled off the realism, the grittiness. But that, was it the second or third episode where that fight sequence in the hallway...
Yeah, the one, I think that was about the second or third episode. I can't remember now. Really reminiscent of the movie Old Boy.
Yes.
And
yes, Old Boy was more like it just kind of went. This thing was going from room to room and coming back out and then going from the way it must have been choreographed and coordinated. It's kind of brilliant because it's probably there are seams in there, but I don't really see them. Like when I watch Birdman, it does feel like one continuous shot, but I can see where they probably, you know, glued stuff together.
When you say Birdman, I still think of the Hanna-Barbera cartoon. So yeah, I was like, there were multiple shots in that. And it's...
the gritty coming-of-age Hanna-Barbera cartoon, Birdman. That would be... Someone should do a spoof trailer.
I'm surprised no one has, to be honest with you. It's a slam dunk.
So Daredevil would be there, and then if I'm allowed to, if you can throw a comment, Veep, the HBO series with Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Matt Walsh and that whole cast.
Yeah.
Because of how much I love, you know, the stuff that Coogan did as Alan Partridge, and the original, you know, the Capaldi show, The Thick of It, which then became, you know, In the Loop, that film. This is the same team, Armando Iannucci, and a lot of the same team that did those films do Veep, and
so it's a lot of cringe humor.
It's like what?
It's a lot of cringe humor.
It's cringe humor, but it's political, but it's just everyone's kind of a shit.
Ah,
there aren't really decent people on the show, but it's not like it's not like they are horrible to each other to make each other feel bad. It's not like that. It's just it goes. It just you hit. It's just like no one is as vicious as Capaldi in the thick of it.
Yeah.
No one is as bad as
Malcolm Granger. Is that his character's
Malcolm,
name?
Malcolm Tucker. But they're just not nice people to each other, and most of them are very, very stupid. But it's really, really well done, and she is just, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I think she's just about the funniest woman, next to Catherine O'Hara and Andrea Martin.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
She's right up there as one of the funniest humans.
We gave it a whirl, it didn't take, but I'm thinking we gotta try it again.
Yeah, she's really something, and it's, Matt Walsh is just...
I always liked him on The Daily Show.
Yes, I think he's the funniest thing in it. So yeah, those would be my three.
Okay.
Now we have to move on to
books.
We've done DVDs, we did TV, we've done movies. Now we're going to take it home with best book. What's your favorite book of the year?
It's kind of a cheat, but I got to go for it. Figures Toy Company re-released my pal Benjamin's book, World's Greatest Toys, Mego Superheroes, which is... a beautiful, comprehensive book. It's a labor of love. I knew Ben through the years of making it, and I know what an incredible struggle that thing was for him.
Sure.
And I mean, as a toy book goes, there's few that match it. And I never feel it gets the accolade it deserves, even though obviously another printing is a great sign.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to praise it is that, when I was doing my book, Ben was always willing to dole out the advice and support me. And, you never want to forget somebody like that because that was
very cool.
It was huge.
That's awesome.
My runner-up book would be a book called Monster Mash, The Creepy Kooky Monster Craze in America, 1957 to 1972. The only thing I begrudge in this book is it doesn't go to 1976.
Okay.
Because, that would be my prime time for monster stuff.
Okay.
It just cuts short at 72. So, I hope that it's successful and there is a 72 to 99. But I doubt it. I think that this guy's really fascinated with, the certain times and what are you going to do? It's a good book. It's by Mark Voger.
You should do a 70s monster book.
Well, it's one of the things I want to do, but I've got a few in the hopper that I'll announce very shortly that are just kind of more... I'm just too focused on right now. So.
Well, when I die tragically, like in the next couple years or something,
mm-hmm.
that'll be the book that the dedication will be, Jason always urged me to write this book.
Right.
Now that he's gone, I'm going to finish it as a tribute to him.
Yep.
My 70s monsterhood.
It'll include a CD of songs I've dedicated to you.
Yes, please.
And all sung.
All done by who's the guy that did the Monster Mash? Boris?
Bobby Boris Pickett. I don't think Bobby Boris Pickett's with us anymore, pal.
All covers of Bobby Boris Pickett. Bobby Boris Pickett covers.
Anyway, what are yours?
Well, mine, now that we're talking toys, I got to start with the toy one because...
Well, you didn't do books.
No, the books. I'm sorry. It's sort of toy collectibles. But I think I'd mentioned on the show before, I'd certainly spoken to you about the Marvel collectibles books that hit.
Yeah.
The Silver Age and now the Bronze Age. Wait, does it go gold and bronze or silver, bronze, and then something else?
I think it's gold, bronze, and... No, gold, silver, and bronze. So bronze would be our era.
Okay, so maybe the first book... The first book basically goes from the very first bit of Marvel memorabilia in, 62. It takes it right up to, 1968 or something.
Right.
This one picks up... The Bronze Age book picks up from, 68 and goes to, just after the first wave of Migos are released in 72.
Yeah, the bronze one has Migos on the cover.
Yes.
And it's by Jay Ballman.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I say this as someone who loves these kinds of books, but not someone by any means that is a Marvel collector, except for novice-wise. I think I have a couple of Steranko posters. It's one of those books that's just invaluable and... fascinating because I have learned so much, and these photos where I go, wait, what year was that ad? 65? Are you telling me that people knew Doctor Strange and he was already popular enough in 65 to get his own t-shirt?
You know, stuff like that, where you just you're and the Halloween costumes and all that stuff is just.
I love stuff like that because it's. Even though I don't want to go into the bakery, I like to look in the window and smell.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one of those things where it's like, I'll never be the world's greatest G.I. Joe collector.
Right.
But I have about 4 different books on G.I. Joe stuff, and right. I love drooling at it.
It's like me with the same thing with the monster stuff. Like I would, it's like that old thing about I don't know much about art, but I know what I like.
Yeah.
Like if that thing speaks to me, or if I have to track that thing down, or whatever. I'm never going to end up... I can't start a monster collection, but I can go, ooh, I'd really like to get that thing. But in the meantime, I want to know about all of it. I want to lust after it in pages and go, look at how cool that thing was. And it's not really from a, I hope I get that someday sort of standpoint. It's just to see the evolution of this stuff. And once again, it does... Reading these things and looking at a book like this Marvel book really... You appreciate this Marvel even more, what these guys were doing, what I know everyone bitches, but Stan as the editor and then all these guys were doing to push this stuff out there to communicate with the audiences that they did. But it makes you value the time we're living in now even more because, as you know, with the stuff you post on Plaid Stallions, you know, when you post things about like those water world water parks with like DC characters,
oh yeah,
mall appearances, stuff like that's all we got.
Yeah,
and now we're living in this is the Marvel age of movies and merchandise and everything else. It reminds you how good we have it.
It's just fascinating.
The other two I would say are two books I picked up in London. One is called Ayoade on Ayoade. Which is Richard Ayoade, very funny spoof kind of book.
Maurice Moss from the IT Crowd or the IT Crowd? I'm not sure.
IT Crowd, and yeah. he's been in the Mighty Boosh
and Dark Place.
Dark Place, yeah, exactly. Which is brilliant, very funny spoof book. And actually, his co-star from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place is Matt Berry, who I know through my buddy Rich Fulcher and a series he did called Snuffbox. And he was in the IT Crowd as well.
Oh, he was Renum.
He was, yes, exactly. But now he's got a show that he's won a BAFTA for called Toast of London. And he plays this pompous idiot, Stephen Toast. And he's written a book called Toast on Toast, Cautionary Tales and Candid Advice by Stephen Toast that is kind of brilliant.
It's a really funny series, by the way.
Very funny.
Yeah.
It's a very acquired taste, I think.
Yeah, you know, my wife had nothing for it, but there's just something about it that makes me laugh.
Yes. So, yes.
He just has great lines, and the character is a likable idiot.
Yes, exactly. And lots of geek references in it, too.
Yeah, there's even I think in the third or fourth episode, there's a Tom Baker Doctor Who flashback. Where Toast is playing a monster.
In the two seasons that have been on so far, the likes of Louise Jameson, Peter Davison, Paul Darrow, Jeffrey McGivern, who is Ford Prefect in the radio show of Hitchhikers, they've all shown up as different characters in this. And I will get to how I know what a massive geek is, Matt Berry is, by the end of the show.
Sure.
So let's finish there. We got the books.
Now we're going to magazines. You and I are both avid magazine readers.
Yes.
For me, my number one pick, as always, because I think I do it every year, is Shock Cinema.
Yeah.
Shock Cinema is a beautiful black and white magazine that mines exploitation and forgotten cinema.
Yes.
It is written by Stephen Pulaski. I hope I said that right. Who wrote the book Slime Time?
Yes.
It's $5. I couldn't believe it the other day when I picked
really?
Up.
Is that
the latest issue has an interview with Michael York in it. This year, I think he had Richard Anderson as well. I love this magazine. I would not want anything to happen to it. So please rush out and buy a copy. It is great.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned magazines because you and I are two of the few people that I know that still buy magazines on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah.
And they mean a lot to us. And they're a dying art. I love them. I love I read them from cover to cover if I dig a certain magazine or whatever. But my number one, and we'll do our runners up in a second, for selfish reasons, I have to pick Famous Monsters magazine this year. It is the reboot of Famous Monsters. It's been going a couple of years. David Weiner is the new editor. He's been there for a bit. And a long time ago, he started talking to me about
them actually doing a Flash Gordon 35th anniversary tribute issue and cover. This is the first cover that this movie has gotten since 1980. And I am beyond flattered. Not only was I interviewed for it, the December issue, I picked it up all year, but I was interviewed for the December issue. It got a Flash Gordon cover. I'm in it with Alex Ross, our interview, photos. And then he was even gracious enough to put a gallery up of my Flash Gordon collection, these weird things that came out when the movie came out, and the Biff Bang Pow stuff. So that's got to be my number one for obvious selfish reasons. And then my other two would be Mojo, a British music magazine, and Empire, which I tend to pick up just about every month.
Oh, yeah.
What were your runners-up?
My runner-up would be Famous Monsters.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That works. Oh, and speaking of, as long as we're... because this just broke today... I will tell everyone when this thing goes up, and I'm telling you, and I'm very proud of this, there is a new magazine that has just hit the stands in the UK called Geeky Monkey. Like Cheeky Monkey, but Geeky Monkey. It is about sci-fi, fantasy, Doctor Who, Batman, you name it. And the Batman cover for Batman vs. Superman out right now, there is an article, an 8-page article, from the Flash Gordon BAFTA reunion night, and I'm in there.
Cool.
There's two shots of me on stage with everyone in this magazine. So please talk to your local news agent. Demand Geeky Monkey.
I'm going to look for it.
I haven't found it yet, but it's out there. We're going to get very selfish here with me in a moment, so I'm going to give it back to you.
Okay.
Boy line of...
All right. Now this is going to look like a fix, but... and it's going to look like I'm kissing your ass, but I'm going to keep it short so we can make eye contact at meals. Biff Bang Pow Flash Gordon figures were probably the top for the year. There was a lot of retro 3¾ out there, but you guys got the one license I really cared about. Well, no, sorry. You guys got one of the many licenses I care about, and you nailed it. And I love that you nailed it.
Thanks, man.
I loved those. I was excited. There were other licenses that came out that weren't as good, but that's, you know, that's the way it is. Not by you guys, but, you know, 3¾ stuff that I was really interested in. I don't want to bag on anybody, but you guys nailed it. And then my runner-up would be a tie. It would be Figures Toy Company did the Super Friends.
Yeah, those are great.
I love the Super Friends. To have them in Mego style is going full circle. I will buy every single one of those figures.
I am tempted to buy every one of them.
Yeah.
Even though I don't have any Super Friends stuff, those are what I would have wanted when the damn show was on.
I don't have any more room for Mego dolls, and it's just, forget it, I'm buying them all. they just arrived today. I'm excited.
Awesome.
And then the third runner-up would be Funko's Jaws line.
That was cool, wasn't it?
I bag a lot on Funko because some of their stuff is not great.
Yep.
But they nailed it with Jaws.
They nailed it.
It
with
was
Jaws,
perfect.
Man. I don't know how they did it with all these other likenesses that they couldn't. That all these other likenesses that they're fuzzy on.
Yeah.
And they look. You think, oh well, they probably don't have likeness rights. And yet here's a film that I know for a fact there are no likeness rights for these actors. There's no faces. Look at that picture on the back. Of the shark, or whatever it was with Roy Scheider, they cut off his head in the photo.
Yeah,
they couldn't even use a photo of him in the damn thing, and yet the sculpts for these figures are great. And this is the line. This is the of anything for Funko. The reactions of this is the one.
It was beautiful. I absolutely love it, and I applaud them, and I hope they do more like this.
So do I.
And what are yours?
Surprisingly, and not a fix. Totally not a fix. My best toy line of 2015 is Biff Bang Pow's Flash Gordon figures. I don't care how that sounds. It's true. And I'll tell you, my favorite moment, I thought it was going to be the best geek moment of the year, but my end of the year, you know, November in London beat it. But the moment that I'm down at Comic-Con being interviewed by Sam Jones on camera, having this man ask me why this film means so much to me on the eve of launching the very first 3¾-inch main Flash Gordon figures was a surreal moment, the likes of which I've rarely had. So that was special in so many ways. My runners-up would be Character Options did a brand new 12th Doctor TARDIS for the 5-inch, 6-inch range of figures. 5-inch range of figures. I love Capaldi so much. I got this thing. It is gorgeous. It does all kinds of, you know, TARDIS sound effects. But best of all, when you open the doors and leave them open, there is a hum and a glow that comes out of the control room, and it lights up. It's got like a humming kind of a light thing, and it's just beautiful. I love it. And then the other one, I'm gonna do this real quick, is a plush toy, believe it or not. And I promise you, everyone, I'm not getting a kickback from this. Anybody get sad out there? You ever having a rough day? Go find the laughing Snoopy plush figure, because no matter what you're going through, you'll hear this. All they've isolated all the times that Snoopy laughs.
But he's mocking me.
What's that?
He's mocking me.
He's gonna. It's like he's just laughing at whatever's going on, and it's a brilliant toy. So I got one of those as well. Those are my three favorites.
I didn't get any plush this year.
You got to get some more plush in your life, my friend.
Yeah. Well, my daughter sleeps on a bed that is mostly plush. It's wall of plush, and she sleeps in a small corner.
Can we do what we're going to call, because it'd be unfair if I didn't throw this to you, can we do what we call the best thing of the year? Do you have like a best thing, a best moment?
Best event?
Best event?
Yeah, for me, it would be Amigo Meet. Every year we have this. This year we moved it. I was worried about moving it to Chicago because I thought nobody, or Skokie, Illinois, because I thought nobody would come to the party. We were wrong. And I'm looking forward to next year. I love Migo Meet. This year it's June 17th, and I'll talk about it every podcast till we have it. But you've got a much better story than me.
No, but can I just say that I would love to get to Migo Meet one of these times, so we need to talk about that.
I would really enjoy that. We could do a live show.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great. My favorite thing, I know we've talked about it before in the show, and I've talked about it enough probably on Facebook and different things, but... It hasn't worn off yet. I had a great trip to London. My wife and I went. We had a 10-day trip. Lots of amazing encounters. Lots of friends to see and dinners to have and all that. But the trip itself was extraordinary. But it culminated in this once in a lifetime event at BAFTA, 35th anniversary of Flash Gordon. They screened the film. The people that are doing this documentary called Life After Flash about Sam Jones screened the film, but. Got little old me to moderate the panel of the production people and the actors that were involved afterwards to introduce the film, black tie sort of event, introduce the film and moderate afterwards. And it was Sam Jones, Melody Anderson, Brian Blessed, Mike Hodges, the director, Peter Wingard, who played Clytus, and Jason King, and so many other great parts. It was beyond surreal.
Even it's Howard, deep validation, man.
No, it totally was, and it was just one of those pinch me kind of moments of just I can't believe we're here and we're doing this and sitting. But my highlight probably was sitting down next to Peter Wingard, having a few moments with him, and not only finding out that it was Sam's idea to reach out to me.
Yeah, that
was still just the highlight. But that I was sitting, I got to sit with Peter Wingard, and the first thing he said to me was he commented on my suit and how much he loved my suit and that he wanted to wear something like that. And then he said, "Do you think I'm dressed? Was this okay?" And he was wearing a pinstripe suit with a polka dot shirt, polka dot scarf, black beetle boots, and a black fedora, and tinted glasses. And I said, "Yes, Peter, once again, you've still managed to outdress everyone in the place."
That's absolutely brilliant, man.
So yeah, so that was, there's lots of pictures we can put up with some of this stuff, but it's I'm not going to come off that high for a while, and I'm trying to ride it right into 2016.
I would.
So that was it.
So I guess we should, not that it's a greatest hits of this, but also talk, just close with some of the iconic people we lost in 2015.
Yeah.
And, there were a lot, and if I go through the list, I'll probably get depressed. But some real lowlights for me personally were Christopher Lee, who we did a whole show about because we adored him. Yeah. Leonard Nimoy, obviously, there's not much more iconic than Leonard Nimoy. And, the bummer of losing Lemmy Kilmister, even though it can't come as a surprise, I'm not the world's biggest Motorhead fan.
But that wasn't.
But I was a huge fan of Lemmy Kilmister.
I think that's kind of what hit everybody, was that not necessarily Motorhead, but him as a character.
A person. He was a really well, like, you know, you never heard a bad thing about the guy. Other than his habits were going to kill him.
Well, that, and he collected Nazi memorabilia.
Yeah.
But no one ever put him on the spot, or no one ever thought that he was like a sympathizer or anything.
Oh, no, he wasn't. He just was a fan.
He just was fascinated by that stuff. And,
yeah.
And only someone like Lemmy
could pull that off.
Could be, and pull it off, and not have everyone think he was a racist, you know, awful person.
I think they addressed that in that excellent documentary about him, I think simply called Lemmy, which everyone needs to see. And he goes, like, he just addresses it. He says, I'm not racist. I just think it's, like, you know, he's just more interested in the history. And I think a lot of people can collect something and not necessarily embrace the ideology, because it is a time past, you know?
Yes, which is why next time we'll talk about my Birth of a Nation memorabilia and my Fatty Arbuckle records.
Oh, you're a Fatty Arbuckle 78s now, eh? Wasn't he mostly a silent film comedian?
Exactly.
Oh, like, those must be just glorious to listen to.
Marcel Marceau's live albums. Well, I would say easily Leonard Nimoy. I mean, we all knew that was going to happen. I mean, there's not many left from the original show, and no one can live forever.
No.
Except for George Burns. But it was very, very sad. It was more... See, when Shatner goes, it's going to be sad. But when Nimoy went, it wasn't just that he became this character, like, oh, Christopher Lee becomes, you know, Dracula. It wasn't that. It was the ethos, you know, the thing that was behind Spock that became, I think, so heartbreaking for people, was that this very gentle person, you know, brought a lot of himself into this amazing character.
Right.
And morphed it and developed it the way he went. And he became a symbol for peace and for you know, approaching things in a logical way, and still, you know, being caring, and all that shit got wrapped up into Leonard Nimoy.
Well, yeah, so that became more or less a lot about him.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So yeah, that's still tough to take, and for so many reasons. Wes Craven. That was such a shock. And this was a guy that, again, I'm not a big, you know, Wes Craven guy, or, you know, horror of his work, but it's undeniable. Freddy Krueger and the Scream, I think he did the first one and the second one, I think, or did just the first one?
I know he did the first one. I'm not sure he did the second one, but, I mean, obviously he directed Last House on the Left, Swamp Thing.
Yep.
I was even watching a TV movie he did recently, Invitation to Hell.
He was supposed to have been a very, very decent guy, and just a good guy all around, the people that worked with him, from what I'd understood. But you can't deny the impression this guy, you know, culturally has made, like with the Freddy films, which I'm not a fan of these films, and I don't dislike them, but it is a really creepy character.
Yeah.
That when you really go back to what this character was supposed to be, it's kind of remarkable that there's so much merchandise made of this character. Like, people forget what his crime was.
Yeah.
But there's no way to deny how popular those frickin' movies were. And then Scream, I think, took it over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, that first movie was massive, and it started another series. And most people in the horror world can't get one franchise off the ground and keep it going, and he kind of launched two big franchises. So, and he also did a great movie, Red Eye. He directed a movie called Red Eye
with Ray Liotta, right? No,
with Rachel McAdams
who's
the guy that played
the Scarecrow? Oh, he's got a
Cillian
Murphy.
Cillian Murphy.
You want to say Cillian? I do that too.
It's not a bad thriller.
No.
And then, of course, he did Mr. Holland's Opus. Did he do Mr. Holland's Opus? No, he did something else that was very light, and he wanted to change pace. But the other one was Haskell Wexler, who, again, was getting a little older, cinematographer. He Medium Cool was his first movie as a director, but he worked with Mike Nichols a lot. He was, I think, cinematographer on In the Heat of the Night. I think most famous was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I think he won... actually, you know what? Maybe he was
No, wait, he was on Cuckoo's. I swear he was on Cuckoo's Nest, but he... Maybe he didn't get the award for that, or he... I know he'd worked with Forman, I think, before, but he did stuff on Cuckoo's Nest, but he might have gotten... He had problems with Forman. I don't know for sure. But he just had an amazing eye as a cinematographer, and he will be the high watermark for a lot of what people do, you know, from this point on, or from the time he kind of showed up. He was kind of brilliant.
Two more I should mention, because it bothers me I've forgotten. There were so many deaths. Patrick McNee, obviously, influential TV spy, and man, character actor. And Yvonne Craig, that one broke my heart.
Oh, yeah.
I keep wanting to forget that.
McNee, if we're doing like our three, yeah, McNee was, McNee and Christopher Lee were very big for you. Lee was, again, you knew any moment.
Yeah.
For me, it's like...
Well, McNee was up there, too. I think he was in his 90s.
McNee was up there, but, I mean, he definitely had tapered off with his work
in
a decade or so. And for me, no matter what else he did... For me, Christopher Lee is now so many... I think of him as Sherlock Holmes. Dracula, obviously. I think of him as Saruman. I think of him as Mycroft. He played Mycroft Holmes in a thing. But Patrick McNee will always be John Steed.
Yeah.
And, you know, man, like those pictures I was talking about earlier, those Star Wars black and whites, and another year's gone by, all I can say is embrace the past, enjoy it, hug it, and always keep moving forward and keep finding new things to love and new ways to appreciate what came before, because, you know, it's like that, and you go, there were these young, beautiful people in the mid-60s in the heart of swinging London.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's going to happen to all of us. It's not a judgment. It's just that before you know it, it's, you know, it's 2016. And you being a parent, I'm sure you face that much more than I do, because I've only got dogs.
Oh, I sing Cats in the Cradle every day and weep.
Right?
Yep.
So,
all right.
That's our lesson.
Speaking of being a parent, I'd better go be one. Because it's New Year's here. Happy New Year's, everybody, and thanks
happy
for listening.
Year's, everybody. And be safe, and hope to hear from you soon when this episode goes up. And looking forward to more geek talk in 2016.
Hallelujah. Thanks, everybody.
All right, man.
All right. Take care, man.
Bye.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
All right.